You're listening to Liberty Sound with Ryan Hill. Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Liberty Sound, broadcasting live on Podbean and soon to be in recorded format on Podbean and other channels. Coming up today, I'm going to talk about an important bit on government surveillance and some things we've learned or confirmed about it. Also, some party switching that's already going on post-midterm election, just like I was talking about recently, and an out-there, otherworldly alien report that apparently aliens are warning or have warned world leaders about the dangers of Brexit, at least according to what one, I think now former EU commissioner had to say. So you can catch this show live on Podbean and, like I said, in podcast format right after it's over, then Rumble and YouTube, also Spotify, Apple, and TuneIn Radio. And then I'm going to have an announcement later on in the show at basically the end of it about the lineup and how that is going to be changing in the days to come. But the show will go on. The show will continue. You can get notes for the show in the description on whichever channel you're watching. And then you can also follow me if you like me. If you're listening to me, you must like me somehow. You can follow me on Truth, on Gab, and Twitter as @FOAOrion. And then I'm on Telegram. I have a channel called @FOAUniverse. So before we get into everything today, like in the last week, right after last week's live show program, I deleted about 10 gigs worth of video files off of my computer. And I mean, it was on purpose, but here's what happened. So I have an external hard drive set up. I hadn't used it in a long time. And I thought, man, I'm really running out of space. I want to do some of these videos and I need some more space, man. I need some more space. So I plugged in the drive, formatted it. I didn't care about it was an old backup or something that was on it, wasn't concerned about. And I was going to say, all right, great. I need to move the space off so that I can recover and do some updates on my computer. And then I did it and everything looked great. And so I deleted the stuff off my computer and I got about 10 gigs back. I had another 20 or 30 to go before I was going to be like really done with that session. And then I thought, well, let me just plug that hard drive back in and make sure it's all still there. And I have not seen the data since. Like the folders went away. Some of the files are still there. I don't know what happened exactly, but sometimes with tech, this is what you get. So always confirm your backups before you delete the originals, kids, just in case you are out there and this is your first experience with a computer. That's the proper procedures. Make sure your backups are solid before you get rid of them. Actually, so it turns out that there's a possibility everything is still there. In fact, it should still be there. Nothing's overwritten it. It would just be hidden. But I may be able to use a Mac for like my day-to-day computing. I may need to use a Windows computer to do a drive repair. And it has something to do with like, it's like the files are really there. You can't delete them that fast. It's not even a solid state drive. So anyways, hopefully I'll get that all back. And this is important, though, in terms of the show, because I have video content that I'm starting to produce, and that is much more space intensive on the computer. In fact, yesterday I ran out of space making a video. You should check it out on the YouTube and the Rumble Liberty Sound channels. It's now up in both of those. It's basically just me going through all of my political mailers from throughout the year and throwing away about 90% of it because, you know, it takes up a lot of space. But it was kind of a good way to review what's gone on this year. And I did eventually get the video done, but I had to delete more. And I'm hoping to not have to like get rid of this stuff until I have a chance to look at it. Some of it I haven't even seen. Oh, yeah. And I also got locked out of Twitter. So everything's just going great for me this week. I mean, this is like a bag full of Mondays or something. So anyways, I'm only locked out of Twitter, though, because I went in to update my password. It's the weirdest thing. I got all the confirmations, but now when I go try to sign back in, it's not. Apparently, there's some issue with Twitter SMS authentication. And if you didn't have your account set up to authenticate a different way, then they can't send a text. So I can't log into Twitter, even though I have the password. It's mind-boggling. All that tech stuff. So we love it. I did problem solving as a professional career for a little bit. So I like running into confusing problems that nobody can solve and then looking deep within to try to figure out, okay, what actually happened here? but I don't work for Twitter, so I can't do that in this case. Now, before we get into some headlines, I just had a note that I wanted to cover first, more me opining. But before the show, I saw some other broadcast that was coming on, and they're speculating about Trump. You know, remember former President Donald J. Trump, the 45th president. You may have heard of this guy. He's a big real estate broker, or not broker, a real estate mogul before he ran for office, and kind of a media personality, just an item a little bit there. Anyway, so some people are speculating that he's going to become the next Speaker of the House. And I thought that that rumor had really been quelled. Trump has indicated he's not interested. And it looks like it's really down to between Kevin McCarthy and Andy Biggs, the two leading Republicans. Andy Biggs being more of the House Freedom Caucus variety, Kevin McCarthy being more of the Mitch McConnell turtle variety. They seem to go hand in hand. But anyways, it's probably going to be McCarthy. I mean, that's what, if you're, you know, putting your betting odds down, I would say it's probably going to be McCarthy. But there's a small chance that he may not have enough votes. In the event that occurs, there's been some kind of memo that was obtained by the National File. And it indicates that the House Freedom Caucus put it out. I think it's an official memo. And they're proposing that Trump could temporarily become the Speaker of the House. And then they have a number of action items that he could do, that he could immediately have the power to call up these different committees and investigations and release some info. But my whole thing is, like, it doesn't really have to be Trump to make that happen. It could be anybody. It could be Andy Biggs. It could be Kevin McCarthy. They could just do the same thing if they're Speaker. But it is an interesting scenario in a case that if that happened and some information came to light that caused an impeachment or a removal of office of both the president and the vice president, then the Speaker of the House would become the president. And there you have a scenario where Trump could come back to office. I mean, I'm not banking on this happening, but it has been in the intro of my show since the last 6 months or so. If you noticed, I took it out today because I'm shortening things. I'm kind of trying to shorten this format as we go into the holidays and all that. Anyways, I've got a little bit less time available. So having said that about the time, let's jump into the headlines. Oh yeah, and there's also more info coming out on the Twitter files, as they are called, but I haven't had a chance to catch up on it. I just know that it's really only confirming things that we already seem to have known. I mean, it's pretty terrible if you think about it. The fact that information was suppressed that may have altered people's voting behavior. It's being called election interference, but honestly, I don't know if that's the correct term for it. I think election interference is not the same as fake news, because technically anything could be considered election interference. I don't know. There's probably some football or basketball analogy with pass interference and, interference. What do you call it in basketball when you interfere with the shot? Anyways, I wasn't thinking about that before the show, but you know what I'm talking about. So maybe we'll cover that in a future episode. So first up, this is more of a comment than a headline, but Putin, you know, that terrible, evil, I don't know what we're supposed to call him anymore, but he's terrible and evil, right? He's Putin. Leader of Russia, has been basically in charge of the place ever since the fall of the Soviet Empire, or the Soviet Republic, whatever you call that. I have in the past, and I mean before this year, the past, not like 2 weeks ago, the past, but I have in the past had some respect for him as a figure, a world leader on the world stage. Remember, it used to be the G8. It was not the G7 summit. Russia got kicked out during the Obama administration. So it's not new news that the US and Russia aren't getting along that well. That's actually been one of the minor points that Trump has made since the time that he's run for office is, hey, how come we don't get along with Russia? That's not really good for us in the long term. Maybe we want to punish them. Maybe we want to sanction them for some things that they do, but it doesn't really change their behavior. And now look, they're invading Ukraine, or have invaded Ukraine, or whatever, you know, however that goes. But and I have my thoughts on how that's all going on. But the point of all this is I've really shifted my feelings about Putin to having much less respect for him. So in the past, I thought that he was a strong leader for Russia. I mean, the Russians do tend to seem, at least in the photos and pictures they get out, and what I've heard from people I've actually known a couple of Russians in my lifetime, and they don't hate him. They're not trying to overthrow him because he's a despot. Now, that's how the Western media portrays him. And so it's difficult for me sitting in the middle of Oklahoma to have much of an idea any different from what we're shown. But I really just don't. The longer this has gone on, okay, if Putin was really acting in the best interest of his people and the people of the provinces and Crimea that he went into, this would have been over so quick. It would have been over, and then they would have held their ground and said, this is exactly why we came in. These are our demands. We're not going to, you know, budge on this. But instead, we've gotten 9 months of off and on, again, missile barrages, questions about where they're coming from, near World War III conditions with a missile ending up in Poland, and it's apparently of Ukrainian origin. Like, what's the deal with that? So this is not something that makes me respect Russia or Putin or anything else. And I'm still not really honestly promoting Ukraine. I don't think that they're innocent in this by any means. But that's basically it. That's pretty much all I want to say. That, and also, I don't know how much of it is Putin proper, as in the man, Vladimir Putin, and how much of it is actually the entirety of the Russian government, the relics of the USSR that are still entrenched in power, and he may represent some of that. But Western critics and pundits tended to act like Putin's acting unilaterally, and I just don't think that's the case. I don't think that he has that much power. I think he is, just like Obama didn't have as much power as some people may have in their minds assigned to him. They're really limited. I mean, he was the one that made a famous statement about having a pen and a phone. And there is a lot of power behind the bully pulpit and the executive orders that a president can put out. But again, those can be challenged by courts. They can be overruled by Congress, and so on and so on. So how much is Putin? How much is Russia? I don't know. That's for everybody else but me to decide. Now we get into our first big story, and the one that I hinted at in the headlines and the intro of the show. And that is, this is about the FBI. It's actually about government surveillance in general. And that has always been a big liberty topic for me. I've been a big Fourth and Fifth Amendment supporter since long before I did this show. So I was listening to Dan Bongino this week, as I often do when I need to get a caffeinated, amped up segment or two in there. And on his podcast and on his show this week, he was talking about, actually the podcast is from the 30th. He may have talked about it on the show this week though, but at some point I grabbed this soundbite, and he's talking about a revelation that came out from a Wired story on a geofence that was obtained. And we'll talk about what that means in a second, by the FBI in response to the January 6th events, which they of course refer to as a riot. And we debate on the merits of that idea, but that's what they're doing. So listen to Dan, who has a lot of knowledge from the security side of things, from the government surveillance and security and investigation and legal proceedings. He knows about all of that. And here's something we're learning about how American citizens have been tracked who were there in D.C. on January the 6th.
You got to read this Wired story. It just came out the other day. A peek inside the FBI's unprecedented January 6th geofence dragnet. Let me just sum it up for you, bottom line up front, so we don't bury the lead. If you were at that Stop the Steal rally and you had a phone that had an Android operating location devices on, you were probably sucked into a surveillance dragnet, whether you broke the law or not. From this Wired magazine piece, this wired.com, this is this really shocking story.
Yeah, it is shocking. It's titled A Peek Inside the FBI's Unprecedented January 6th Geofence Dragnet. Now, you know what a dragnet is in the law enforcement sense. This is a geofence dragnet, meaning basically anybody who could be could have been recorded to have been within a geographic area, hence around the Capitol, is caught up in this dragnet. And basically they can be surveilled. They can be treated as though what traditionally you would need a warrant to get some of this information, because they were simply there. And it's a big revelation. Now, we've heard of this before, of course. We know it can be done. And there's a lot of things I cut out of the Bongino segment because it's like 8 minutes long. and I want to talk today a little bit too. But he talks about the difference between pursuing a crime in search of a person who committed it versus searching people in pursuit of crimes, or searching people to find out if there was a crime committed. And that's what this geofence amounts to. So he talked to some more, you know, people that have expertise in this to provide a little bit more detail. Let's go into that.
I spoke to FBI agent Kyle Serafin yesterday about it on my radio show. And he told us there's this unit within the FBI. Have you heard of this? The CAST unit? It's a unit that what they do is they specialize in cell phone type surveillance and tracking. I'd never heard of this before. They talk about a geofence warrant from the Wired piece. They note that the FBI's biggest ever investigation, talking about January 6th, included the biggest ever haul of phones from geofence warrants. They note this, they found a filing that Google initially identified 5,723 devices as being in or near the Capitol during what they call here the riot. Only around 900 people have been so far charged with offenses relating to the siege. The filing suggests, listen to this. So again, if your phone was pinging at that Stop the Steal rally, regardless if you committed a crime or not, you were caught up in a geofence warrant.
Again, it repeats the point at the end of it. If you were there, you were caught up in this. So Dan says he spoke to Kyle Serafin on his program or on his show, one of his shows, Dan has a lot of shows, about a CAST unit, C-A-S-T, within the FBI, which specializes in cell phone surveillance and tracking. This is, again, the biggest ever FBI investigation. And so just through this dragnet, it looks like, and I don't have access to the full Wired piece. I think you have to be a paid subscriber to get that. But Dan has those resources. So thank you, Dan. And according to that, Google says 5,723 devices, over 57, close to 6,000 devices identified in or near the Capitol around the time of the riot. Some 900 of those have been served charges, or the owners of the people with the phones that were there. So they used the location data of the phones, which, you know, remember, we can't use that for the mules in Pennsylvania. Is that where they did that movie out of? But in other states too, but I think they focused on Pennsylvania. But, you know, you can't use geolocation to catch ballot traffickers or see if they committed the crime, but they can go into over 6,000 ordinary people who just showed up in DC for what was a rally that was scheduled and I presume had permits and everything, because you have to do all that to have any kind of event in DC. So people who are law-abiding, legal citizens, not accused of a crime, are now caught up in this dragnet, and it's resulted in some 900 charges. So that's pretty serious. Here's another aspect, and it's kind of the tech aspect that I also bring to the table here, but this is brought up again on the Bongino show. Airplane mode won't save you. You want to turn your phone off so that you don't get tracked. And I turn my phone off like at night, usually if I think about it and other things. But that's more not necessarily because of the tracking, but it's because of the wireless exposures. And I try to minimize my exposure to wireless signals. Long story, we'll talk about it some other time. But a lot of people do it in order to avoid being tracked. Well, listen to this.
Second part of this Wired thing. The filing suggests that dozens of phones that were in airplane mode during the riot, airplane mode. So you think you're safe in airplane mode? Oh, my phone's not going to ping off a tower anywhere. The filing suggests dozens of phones in airplane mode or otherwise out of cell service. We're still caught up in the hall here. Nor could users erase their digital trails later. In fact, 37 people who attempted to delete their location data following the attacks were singled out by the FBI for greater scrutiny. Folks, this phone right here, this thing is a tracker, man. It's a beacon in your pocket. Airplane mode won't keep you safe. You need to understand, when you read this piece, they explain it. The GPS tracking, a lot of that satellite tracking, is going to work whether you have that mode on or not. Just because they can do this doesn't mean they should. But they're doing it. And you need to respond appropriately. You have this thing on you, it's a tracking device. Make no mistake. And it will be used against you.
Now, I have some questions, again, on the technical side of how exactly could that work? You've got your phone off. It's in airplane mode, so it shouldn't be picking up any cell phone towers or even looking for them. How could there still be location data? Well, he hinted at it there, and I think maybe the Wired article might go into some more detail, maybe not, because I've looked this up before, and it's difficult to find info on it that's at least reliable. But your phone also typically has GPS capabilities. In fact, if you go search, I'm just thinking I've looked up phone specs before, you can get a full-on spec sheet that tells you every sensor, every piece of, you know, technology that's within that phone, and they have GPS capabilities. I've even been on an airplane with my phone in airplane mode before, and I just happened to pull up Google Maps to see what would happen with it turned off, and it spotted me over, I was somewhere in between California and New York, that's all I can tell you, but it found pretty accurately where I was. It was at least in the right state. Now, I can't confirm exactly how accurate it was. How did it do that? Well, it must be because there is some other way to determine my location. Then he also mentions that some people tried to delete their location history after leaving the rally or the riot or the event that took place that day. And they were targeted for greater scrutiny because they went in trying to erase their records. Now, I think that's probably on the Google side of things. Google will store certain pieces of info about you that you can go in at any time and you can clear it out. You can start over. You can delete your accounts. There's all kinds of ways you could go try to cover your tracks. It looks like Google probably keeps that history anyways, even if you delete it. So don't think that there's a way that you can really get out of that. I have thought since I saw the 2000 Mules documentary that really my takeaway was that from that was not the ballot trafficking so much. It was, wow, don't take your cell phone anywhere because, I mean, people can tell where you go for breakfast and lunch and dinner if you go out to eat somewhere just based on your cell phone habits. And they can say, oh, this person likes to have McDonald's 3 days a week. They can tell that. How do you think that the authorities showed up when Mike Lindell was at a Hardee's? How do they know? Now, he was in a different state, so they must have been using live or had some kind of tip-off of where he was going. Maybe somebody was bugged next to Mike Lindell and said, hey, oh, I could go for a hamburger. And I don't know. I'm just making this up. But anyway, so be advised, friends. The government friends are looking for, in Dan Bongino's words, looking for people in search of a crime. So you don't even have to necessarily do anything. You just have to not be at the right place at the right time. And by the way, who are they not looking for? Who are they not going after? Ray Epps and other people who may or may not have been instigators or informants trying to get that whole situation riled up in the first place. I'd like to talk about that some more, but we got to move on. So did I not say within the last few weeks, probably the week before the midterms, that after the midterms, depending on how things went, and of course we didn't get as big of a red wave or even as big of a red splash as many had hoped, but I had predicted that you'll start seeing Democrats switch parties to Republicans. And, well, it's already beginning to happen, this time in West Virginia, and it's at the state level, so we're not talking about somebody in the U.S. House at this point or the Senate, but we'll talk about that right after I talk about Glenn Jeffries. He is a West Virginia state senator and went on Metro News with Hoppy Kercheval, the name of the host of a show out there. And I guess he's been on the program a lot before. They seem to have a good report. So here is his introduction, and we'll go from there.
Glenn Jeffries, who today switched from the Democrat to the Republican Party. Now there will be 31 Republicans in the state Senate.
Okay, so it's moving the Senate. I don't know the total number of seats in West Virginia, but they have a Republican majority. This will only strengthen that majority. Maybe it's like 50, maybe it's 30 to 20 in, you know, the balance or something like that. In Oklahoma, we have some, like, we have 77 counties, and I think we have at least as many. It's like 80 or 90 House of Representatives. We have a big House of Representation in Oklahoma, just like we have a lot of school districts and a lot of school superintendents throughout the state, which is another story we don't have time for. But in West Virginia, this is showing the momentum swing is a Democrat saying, hey, I can't get anything done as a Democrat. In fact, Hoppy asks him, this is my next clip, why are you moving parties? And part of his answer is basically, I want to be able to get things done for my constituents. Here he goes.
So why the switch?
Hoppy, you and I talked about this last week.
Yes.
And, I look at every day. I look and see how I can best represent the state of West Virginia and my constituents. I never have been a party person. I'm not. I've always been able to work together with whomever it may be. And I look at what is best for me, how I can be effective for the state and for my constituents. And I think the momentum that I got going on right now, you know, there's a lot of economic development that's happening. I've had the ability to work with the Economic Development Department on projects, on companies that are looking to locate here. As a matter of fact, I pulled off the side of the road to get on here. I'm on my way to Charlotte. We got some companies that have an interest in West Virginia, and we're going down to talk with them and see if we can bring them here.
Then he's asked about disagreements next, and if he disagrees with the Democrat Party and their policies, is this why he left? Is it an ideology difference? And he gives a pretty good state-level politician answer.
Let me ask you this question. Do you agree with everything that the Republican Party does?
Who, me?
Do you agree with everything that the Democrat Party... No, I'm asking. Oh. I'm asking that out there to anyone.
Oh, okay.
Do you agree wholeheartedly with what the Republican Party does, do you agree wholeheartedly what the Democrat Party does? I think each one of us is going to answer that. No, there's some things I disagree with. And so that's where we're at.
All right, Glenn Jeffries, now a Republican, a representative from Putnam County, switching parties today from Democrat to Republican.
There you go. Predictions on this program just unfolding right before your ears and eyes. More on the eyes coming up in a second. And I'm not talking about the A-Y-E. Anyways, bad joke. So that's West Virginia. Interestingly, after Trump became president in 2016 or 2017 when he took office, the governor of West Virginia switched parties from Democrat to Republican. Trump used to talk about and still mentions it from time to time, how everybody was starting to come together, at least up until the beginnings of COVID, because there was so much prosperity returning to this country in various forms, maybe not every form, but in a lot of forms, that there some of that was starting to begin then. Now, what could happen next? Depending on how, there's a race going on in Georgia today, and we won't know the results until after this recording and everything is over. It's still the mid-afternoon right now, and I think they're open till, 8 Eastern, I think is how late the polls are open there. And if Herschel Walker ends up winning this special election, which he might, or he might not, if he wins, that brings the Senate balance to 50-50. Now, imagine one more party switch with somebody like Joe Manchin could turn that table over to 51-49 in favor of the Republicans. You also have Tulsi Gabbard, who didn't she just leave the Democrat Party? She has not left their caucus, and that could still be what happens if Joe Manchin becomes an independent or a Republican. He may do that for the political points, but then also stay in the Democrat caucus because he thinks he'll have a better chance at getting things done there. That's really what it comes down to for a lot of these politicians, is where can I be most effective at whatever it is they're trying to do, whether that's good or whether that's bad. Next up, even the aliens warn of the dangers of Brexit. At least, it turns out this story is actually from 2016, and I clicked on it. You know, sometimes these things get shared around as though they're new, but I wanted to inform you that this is not a new story. In fact, the current EU commissioner is a female, not a male. This is the old EU commissioner, president, or EU commission president, Jean-Claude Juncker. I think that's how you say his last name. It's in English, it's Juncker. And then in French, I guess it's Jean-Claude. And the soundbite is also in French. So we're not going to try to listen to that one. But I'll tell you this is the story from 2016 from themirror.co.uk. Jean-Claude Juncker believes aliens are worried about Brexit, claiming he'd heard from leaders of other planets. Literally, okay? So the article reads, conspiracy theorists have gone into meltdown after Jean-Claude Juncker said he heard from the leaders of other planets during a European Commission meeting. I presume they mean a meeting. The president of the commission had been speaking in front of the EU bigwigs when he made the slip. Then I'll see if I can get an excerpt from there. Here's part of the translation. He says, "I have seen, listened, and heard many leaders of other planets, and they are very worried because they wonder about the course the EU would follow. So we have to reassure both the Europeans and those who observe us from afar." That's really interesting, isn't it? I find it curious that leaders out of Europe, Canada, even our own government, there seems to be a lot of semi-suppressed knowledge that we've been visited by creatures from other worlds, or that they're here with us now, or that there's some kind of governmental relations between them. There seems to be a lot of an apparatus there for something that we still don't know if like, I don't know. I mean, personally, I was just telling this to some people that I work with the other day, is I've looked up in the skies since I was a kid. You know, I look up if there's a meteor shower or an eclipse, or sometimes just stargazing, and I have a telescope and everything. I've never seen a fast moving flashing light, patterns of light moving in ways that jet fighters can't. But I also do know that there are government vehicles that exist. I even found the patent for one recently that have some exotic propulsion, which is pretty interesting. So who knows? I mean, you know, I just think it was funny, though, that the aliens are worried about Brexit. Isn't that great? That's hilarious. I think it's funny. And lastly, in our headlines section today, Joe Biden recently, I meant to put this on a recent episode, but I just now got the soundbite. He says electric vehicles are not a joke. That's right. If your power goes out during a thunderstorm, you can plug in your electric vehicle. And he's taken a lot of lashing from conservatives on this. So listen to the soundbite.
Electric vehicle all across the country. And by the way, in your home, you know, the batteries that we have now, and they're getting more and more sophisticated. You know, a lightning storm takes out all the electricity in the house. Guess what? You can plug your car into the house and make it light up. You think I'm joking? It's a little simplistic, but literally you can. Literally you can. Oh, this summer. It really is kind of exciting. I get a little.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Every isolated sound, Joe Biden soundbite is just like an instant classic. I mean, he's sitting there and then everybody kind of laughs tepidly. It sounds like they're almost laughing at him. And then he sort of makes a joke about it, but he does it in a very Joe Biden-esque way where he just kind of plays it off, deflects in some way, where we're changing the topic now, changing the topic. But is he joking? Well, let's think about it. An electric car is powered by a gigantic, for a car, battery. It's got to be smaller than the car, of course. But it's got a big battery by car standards. It's bigger than a gasoline battery, for sure. And it has a certain amount of capacity. So if it can be charged and it can power the car, well, that same voltage could be used to power something else. And how much electricity does a generator produce? Well, those are just small gasoline engines. They're, you know, 1 liter, 2 liter kind of engines, and that can power a house. So it's really not actually that unreasonable to say that an electric car could power a house during a thunderstorm. The problem is, and this is maybe why he does deserve the lashing, is what happens when your car battery runs out of power and your house is off? Now what are you going to do? Okay, at least in the event of a gasoline generator, you can go put some more gas in it. And hopefully there's a gas station within walking distance that has electricity and can do that. But when you're out of electric juice and that's your backup, what are you going to do? I've got a battery backup for some of my electronics, but it's only good for maybe an hour or two at the max. If you're using it, I've wondered, could I keep a refrigerator or power my heater or something with it? Probably need a beefier system to do more than just to kick it on. But, you know, that could be coming in the future. There may be different ways that you can interact with power devices. I've thought it would be a good idea for a long time to have smaller cells for power generation. And a lot of people do that with solar panels now. I still don't think it's economical or ecological, frankly speaking, at this point, but a lot of people are starting to do that and the technology will continue to get better. Hey, it might be nice if you had choices when it came to electricity. We still need to go a long ways though before everybody can be driving an electric car, because again, those are hurting and straining the electric systems in states like California. All right, now let's move on to a few other topics, and then I've got my announcement about the show. And don't worry, the show's not going away. I just want to make sure that everybody's able to continue following it, and you know what's going to happen in the coming month, basically, as we close out the year. So recently at church, there was a Sunday school lesson where I go to church, and the series has been on the idea of truth, and what is truth, what is biblical truth, what's the source of truth. And I have also brought up during the same time frame that saying from the Assassin's Creed series that nothing is true and everything is permitted. And that's certainly how you can look at politics is, yeah, no matter which party is telling you their talking points, they're lying. Okay, they're embellishing. They are using straw man tactics. They're doing something. They're not really being totally truthful. But sometimes we permit that because it's a means to an end. Okay, yeah, you might use a straw man to promote some policy that's going to benefit the middle class. But the goal is really not a nefarious one. So it's okay to exaggerate a little bit. Advertising does this, you know, buy a Coke. All right, obey your thirst and drink Sprite. Well, is your thirst really telling you to drink a branded soda? No, it's not. But it's a good slogan and it helps sell sodas, right? So that's kind of what I'm talking about there. But ultimately, there is one source of truth, at least if you're asking me. Now, maybe it's not the same for you, but I think that Jesus is the truth. I mean, he's famous for having said he is the way, the truth, and the life. Outside of Jesus, Pilate even asked him, Pontius Pilate, the Roman magnate, I forget what his official position was, but he was the one that ordered Jesus' crucifixion. He looked him in the face and said, "What is truth?" And he was looking at, I believe, the source of truth when he said that, which is probably why it got written down. But outside of that, everything is kind of muddy. You've got shades of gray, right? And even the best of people will let you down from time to time, which is why you shouldn't look to people for all of your inspiration. You've got to be careful. On that note, politicians are kind of like broken clocks. And I had this idea that the trick with broken clocks is you have to rotate the clocks. And that way, the correct ones are correct at the correct times. Because a broken clock's always right twice a day. So as long as you keep swapping out the clocks at a regular interval, should be good to go. I don't know if that's the greatest analogy, but that's something I thought of. And this is kind of the argument for term limits. Term limits, in my opinion, is really not the way to go. Because in California, if the people want to keep electing Nancy Pelosi until she's no more, they can do that. Okay, that's their right to do it. But term limits would make it so that, like in my state, you can only run, I think it's 3 or 5 terms in state house, and then you can still run for office, but not that office. And it helps get turnover in your halls of legislation so that you don't have these entrenched powers. One of the drawbacks is that lobbyists and staffers end up getting more power and they're not elected. So that's an issue. But the other issue with me is, you may have somebody that is a good representative of the people, and then you lose them as a result of that. That, and I just think, again, constitutionally, and even going back to the Declaration of Independence, if the people want to elect someone to represent them, I believe that's their right. So we may someday see term limits if there's a true red wave, that could be something that comes down the pike. But as of today, then probably not. Maybe there should be a measure, a turnover index. I might come up with some kind of way to say, in business and in production, in manufacturing, you use positive metrics. If we're at 98% and we can get to 100%, that motivates people. But if you try to say like, all right, we want to have a 0% injury rate and it's 42%. Well, that's pretty demotivating. But if your injury-free score is at 80%, you might say, hey, we can get that up to 90. It's just a psychological thing. So maybe there needs to be some kind of a measure for Congress and the Senate, and we'll see what's our turnover index at, and can we get that number up a little bit higher, and we can celebrate when it happens. Right, so that was a great thought. Now, speaking of great thoughts, I've been thinking a lot about the show, which I started in February of this year. I've started little pockets of a show kind of like this in the past, but have not really ever carried it out quite this long for various reasons, having time and experimenting with different formats. But it's really been an experiment all the way through, and I'm looking for a way that I can consistently be putting out more and more content, which I think has happened this year. It's been really good. But with Podbean being my home channel for this, I signed up for a membership that would give me unlimited storage and hosting. And I think it gives me, I don't know what the cutoff is for live broadcasts if you're on the free version of it, but basically you only get like 4 or 5 episodes and then they start deleting stuff. So you can't have a repository for the show. And I knew that. And so I registered for it's like $15 a month or so. But in order to support that, there has to be the volume of listenership and all that. Otherwise, it's just costing me money to do that. And that's kind of the state that I've been in. On the other hand, I put out a video before Thanksgiving on YouTube and on Rumble only. Didn't come on any of the audio channels because it's a visual production. And it did really well. I've got like 1,300 views just on that video the last time I looked at it. It's been ticking up just a little bit. Of course, Thanksgiving is over now. The timing is, it's not going to get a lot more views in the near future. But one video can reach 1,000 people. I just got a notification when I signed in today on Podbean Live that I've had 100 unique listeners. So I've had more than 100 listens, I've had close to 1,000, but not that many listeners. Whereas that one video had over 1,000 unique people access it, or unique IP, however they determine those metrics on there. So looking ahead, I am planning I've already been planning in January to turn the cameras on. I'd like to have this become a video format, and I can talk about different topics. It could be a mixture of live or pre-recorded. I could maybe talk about something live and then play a recording of something else I've already scripted out. Got a lot of options there. So I've been planning to do that, and that is the plan. In January at some point, we'll be doing a video weekly show and potentially other content. However, I'm going to remove my Podbean subscription, so probably going live, I may test it in December, we'll see, but going live in January will be on YouTube and Rumble streams, and or. I'm not sure if I can do both at the same time, but we'll give that a go as well. Either way, it'll still be on both of those channels. And then I'm going to look at the other ones, which are Spotify and Apple and TuneIn. I don't know how to necessarily keep that syndicating out because Podbean does it automatically. There may be a way to do it, but if it's going to be a ton of work, I don't really know. Like, I don't know. I have no idea how to find out who listens on those channels. I don't know where the stats are. So we'll figure it out. But I wanted to start making that announcement now. So if you don't see this show on Podbean, you'll know where it's gone. The show name is the same on YouTube and on Rumble. It's called Liberty Sound, 2 words. And I think I have a handle now so I can get like a link to both of those channels. Maybe I should put that in the description. And then don't worry, I'll be announcing this again in the days ahead. I put out a video yesterday that is me breaking down politics. I may have mentioned that at the beginning. So check that out on YouTube and on Rumble. You can also watch that Thanksgiving video. And then let me know what you think in the comments on those or on here. I'm open to suggestions and feedback on what I come out with. I'd like to be able to make little videos that dive into topics that sometimes I don't have enough time on the hour-long format like this to really spend 20 minutes just on one issue. And when I do, I go back and listen. I'm like, oh man, I really needed to make that more succinct and then just move on. So that gives me a chance to edit it. So I hope that you will join me on all of those other channels. And it's not that I don't like Podbean, but it hasn't necessarily been the most, Podbean to me seems like it's good if you already have a community that's pretty sizable. And when you want to go live, there's going to be 50, 100 people or so available to come and listen. But it's just really not like that at this point. So I think in terms of growth, it'll be better if I start using these other channels. So that is it for the show today. Once again, you can follow me on Truth, on Gab, and Telegram. and also Twitter. If I ever get signed back in, hope I can sign back in there. That would be wonderful. And if you like this content, be sure to subscribe, and especially when it comes to subscribing on YouTube and Rumble. Until then, I will talk to you all next week, and we'll be back. Maybe we'll have some holiday cheer going on and talk about some Christmas stuff.